Hello, kids. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and every Thursday, we release these special episodes where we look back at Risk content from our earlier years. Now, for a long time now, the first 2 years' worth of Risk episodes, the ones from October of 2009 through October of 2011, have been behind a paywall. But that's been a little confusing for a lot of Risk fans who are always telling us they didn't even know those first 2 years worth of episodes existed. So we thought it would be fun if every other Thursday now we reran an entire episode from the very earliest days. Now, as we review these throwbacks, remember many of these recordings were made over a decade ago. I just ask that you keep that historical context in mind. Today in 2020, there's a vastly different consciousness. Risk has always asked our storytellers to err on the side of not being too cautious, to speak in as unfiltered a way as possible. That said, we also want our storytellers to be compassionate in their storytelling. But even in stories where you hear an overall compassionate context to the sharing, you might still notice some moments that strike you as cringeworthy today. A lot of these storytellers, and myself as the host of some of the oldest episodes, would probably have handled those moments differently today. As always, the title of the series, Risk, is itself a trigger warning. This week, the 15th episode of Risk ever made. It premiered in April of 2010, and it's called Love. Don't mind him. There's at least one risk you're already taking, because this is Risk, the show where people tell true tales they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison. That was Alec Gross up top, making like the good Godfather Brown. And today's episode is about nothing more nor less than love. The beauty, folks, and the beast. Love is the drug we're thinking of. And we're thinking we'll start with a story from the Risk live show by our pal, Leslie Goshko. A Bird in the Hand.
When I was in high school, I managed to get one and only one date, and during which I got car sick and vomited on his crotch. So it didn't look like dating was going to get a lot better for me when I got into college, because I was only meeting guys like Doug. And Doug was one of the most obnoxious, loudmouthed, self-centered, just like really egotistical guys I had ever met in my life. And every conversation you had with him, he had to insist that not only was he as funny as Adam Sandler, but he was just as Jewish. So imagine my surprise. 2 years later, I find myself head over heels in love with this guy. And how that happened was, we both worked in the music department. And we had similar schedules, and we were spending a lot of time together. And he was going through a breakup with his girlfriend, and so I was consoling him through this whole thing, and he was opening up, and I saw a different side to Doug. I saw that he had feelings, and he was really sensitive, and he was as funny and Jewish as Adam Sandler. So I get this huge crush on him, but I keep it to myself because I don't want to ruin our friendship. So one day we're hanging out, and Doug says to me, "Oh, Leslie, did I tell you what the guys on my floor did to me?" I said, "No, what are the guys on your floor here?" He said, "Well, you know, I like to sleep naked." I was like, "I do now." And he says, "Well, I got into bed and I felt this lump next to me. So I got up, turned on the light. Turns out the guys on my floor put a dead pigeon in my bed." Just as I'm about to say, "That's jacked up," he goes, "Isn't that hilarious? I love those guys." Now, I don't know what malfunction went on in my head at this moment, but in the split second when he said that, my brain took a meeting with Kevin Spacey's character from the movie Seven. And then they invited the nihilist from The Big Lebowski, and they all got together and they concocted this great game plan for me, which was, Leslie, if he loves those guys that much for putting a dead pigeon in his bed, how much more will he love you if you send him dead animals through the campus post office? And I was like, yes, that's a great idea. That's what we're going to do. And that's what I did. And it's funny, you know, you hear that phrase when people say, you know, when you make up your mind to do something, the universe comes to your aid. And it does. Because everywhere I looked, there were dead animals. There were baby birds with broken necks. And there were maggot-filled sparrows. And I was like, it's a sign of love. We're going to have babies and get married. So what I would do is every day I would make a mental note of where these dead birds were. And then at night, I would come out with a Ziploc bag, put the bird in the bag, zip it up, and then bring it up to my dorm room. But then once I was in my dorm room, I was like, I can't have a dead bird in my room. That's crazy. So I would take that, walk down the hall to the communal dorm freezer, put it in there. In the morning, take it out, wrap it up in a box, send it through the campus post office, and it was on his mailbox during the day. So I do a couple of these, and he starts mentioning to me, you know, I'm getting dead animals in the mail. And I say, oh, it must be those friends of yours who can commit to long-term relationships. And so, and then every once in a while, like, I'll mix it up. Like, if I find, like, a squirrel, I put it in a pizza box, and I pay a friend to deliver it to him. So this goes on for a while, and spring break is coming up, and we had a really large group of mutual friends. And so we were all going to go and spend spring break at this ranch in Montana. And I was so excited because I was wooing Doug and like doing all this work. And I was going to have all this FaceTime. And I was telling my friend how excited I was. And she said, oh, no, no. We're dropping Doug off in Wyoming. He has family there. And I was like, no, all my hard work. And now I have to go to plan B, which is just like let him touch my boob in the van. So I was like, okay, I'll make the best of it. So the day comes and we're loading up the van to go on this trip. And right before we're about to leave, Doug pulls me aside and says, listen, I know you're sending me dead animals. To which I said, that's crazy talk. And then he goes, do you want to come to Wyoming with me? And I was shocked and excited, but also confused because I didn't know what was more messed up. The fact that I thought I could seduce a man with dead animal carcasses or the fact that it worked. But I was like, okay, let's go. So we go and we get dropped off in Wyoming, and we have this great week together. Like, I meet his friends, I meet his family, you know, I'm past the point where I'm vomiting on my dates, like, this is going really well. And we get picked up at the end of the week, and we go back to school, and I was like, yay, I have a boyfriend now. But when we get back to school, things change. He starts avoiding me, he doesn't return my calls, and now we're not working as much together at the office, and I'm so confused what has happened in the short amount of time since we've been back. And so I decide I'm just gonna go to the music office and ask him what's up. So I go there and there's nobody in there, and I turn to leave, and as I'm leaving, I hear voices coming from the utility closet. And this is the part, like, if it was a horror movie where you see the girl, like, walking down the dark hall towards the room with the chainsaw, and you're like, why are you walking there? Don't open the door, don't open the door. And I didn't want to, but I had to because it was in the script. So I go, and I open the door, and there is Doug and the ex-girlfriend, and they're making out. And I feel like I've been sucker punched like 8,000 times. I'm looking at them, and Doug's looking at me, and he's not saying anything, and I don't have anything to say to him. And so I just grab the door, and I shut it, and I leave. And then to add insult to injury, a couple days later when we do talk about it, he just says, well, you and I were never officially together. And then I get this other lovely surprise from my university, which is if I don't attend summer school, I'm not going to graduate. So I finish the rest of that semester being a lovely, surly person. And then I enroll in summer school, and I'm unpacking in my new dorm room, and the door opens. I turn around to introduce myself to my new roommate, but I don't have to because I already know her. It's the ex-girlfriend. Oh. And just as I'm about to say, hell to the no, she puts up her hand and says, listen, I'm sorry. We're not together. He's a jerk. Can we just talk? And even though at this point, like, I'm distinctly going with the idea of kicking her square in the vag, like, I'm in summer school, so I have nothing else to do, so I say, okay. So we sit down and we talk, and she tells me basically that he did the same thing to her. He led her on and jerked her around. And she's telling me the sad story, you know, about the same thing that happened to me. And as I'm sitting there, I'm like, this is just sad, like Lifetime movie sad, what this is. And I realized we're wasting so much time on this jerk of a guy, you know, and giving all this effort. And so I tell her, you know, it's no big deal. Let's just let bygones be bygone. And we spend the rest of that summer, and we actually get to be really good friends. And we enjoy each other's company, and we're still Facebook friends to this day. And, you know, even though I set out for one thing that I didn't get, I didn't end up totally alone, because I did get the girl, and that's okay. And I was content with that, because I learned that a bird in the hand is worth two in the mail.
Let me stay up late watching a lot of really adult shows, and I remember my brother and sister and I used to really like Dream On and Herman's Head, and when I watch those now, they strike me as much more overtly sexual shows than there are on TV at the moment. Because of this, I was curious about actual human sexuality. The first time I touched a penis was under the table in home economics class when I was in the 7th grade, and the boy was Nick. He was this really cute basketball player. And we were together for 5 months, but we only kissed twice. Still probably one of my longest relationships. We never got to see each other because Nick lived out in the country and I lived downtown in this small college town in the Upper Catskills. And even though my parents were like really permissive about letting me drink wine with dinner or listen to violent rap music or reading Philip Roth books, they would never have let me have a boyfriend when I was 12 years old. So I had to keep this relationship a secret. Because of this, the only contact we had was our daily note we exchanged in home economics class. And my girlfriends were so thrilled that I had a serious boyfriend that they would help me write and decorate and fold my daily love letter. And through this collaboration, my notes took on a much more suggestive tone than I had intended. At one point, I saw something on television where a woman wrote a really sexy note to a guy telling him all the things she really liked about his body. So I decided to try my own 12-year-old version of this, even though I'd never really seen Nick's body. And I wrote him a note that said something like, "Dear Nick, good luck in basketball today. You have really sexy abs. Love, Caitlin." And he wrote me back something like, "Dear Kate, I love you. Good luck in track today. You have the hottest ass in all of Otsego County." And it went on and on like this and got even more graphic until after about a month of exchanging and giving a note every day, I had a big paper bag full of like really dirty folded up junior high origami under my bed, and I figured I needed to hide it from my parents. So I looked around my room and I focused in on my Laura Ingalls Wilder Little House on the Prairie box set. I figured if I could push the books out about an inch, I could hide all of my notes from Nick. So I did this, and I figured my relationship was safe. This went on, but after a while, notes weren't enough. One day, I decided, this is the only time I get to see my boyfriend. I'm going to use this as my intimate time. So we started out by holding hands. We held hands for about a week, and then after a while, hand-holding progressed to me throwing my leg over his under the table. And then I saw something where a woman stuck her hand down a guy's pants on TV, but that scene was in a restaurant and at a junior high. But I decided to try it out anyways. So this went on for about a week or two, where I was giving kind of like a half-assed hand job while a woman in the front of the classroom talked about how to clean the sink and what baking powder was for. Finally, one day, this really bad kid in the class, Dustin, figured out what was going on, and he went under the table and witnessed this and came out from under the table and started screaming, "Oh boy, Nick, that's just great. You wouldn't believe what's going on under there." Our old lady teacher probably knew I was doing something wrong, but because I was a good student, the teacher believed me and not him. So Dustin got sent to the principal, and I figured I got away with it. But the next day when we went into the class, the whole room had been rearranged. Instead of sitting around one big table, we had now been split up into groups, and I was mortified. The teacher had rearranged her entire lesson plan midway through the semester just because I couldn't keep my hands to myself. This distance proved too great between me and Nick. We only had our notes. I tried to call him once, but when I did, his mom said he was playing with fire, so I never called him again. After about a week of this, we ended up breaking up. I was sad about it, but I was really more concerned about the stash of really dirty notes I had from him behind my Laura Ingalls Wilder books. One day, when my dad was taking a nap on like a Saturday afternoon watching football, I decided to take a break from practicing piano and go upstairs and destroy all the notes. I decided to make a paste out of them. I got them in a plastic bag and I got them wet and I tried to mush them all up, but it didn't really work. So instead, I was like, I'll bury the notes. I tiptoed downstairs with my sopping wet bag of notes and dug a hole in our backyard and buried our notes. And just as I was cleaning up the hole, I heard my father call down from the balcony. I was terrified, but I just played it off really cool, and I went inside and washed my hands and put the whole thing behind me. I didn't think he ever knew anything about Nick until one day he was driving me to a junior high dance, and he said something like, "So, Mom says that boy that was always standing around when she used to pick you up, he isn't there anymore." And I didn't know what to say, but what came out of my mouth struck me as a really adult observation even at the time. I told him, "People come in and out of your life all the time," and we never spoke about it again. And I'm not sure where I got that line, but I'm pretty sure it was from TV.
I took a risk and then I died. Now I'm dead. Locked inside a box in the dark, and I thought I was smart, but I'm not, but I'm not. That's what happens when you risk. That's what happens when you risk.
The biggest crush that I have ever had, it's a decade or more long, was this guy, Tommy Germain. I met him in the summer of 93. It was after my freshman year of college, and I went back down to Baton Rouge, where I'm from, and I was working backstage on the Baton Rouge Little Theater summer musical, which was Big River that year. He was Tom Sawyer. You know, he had that cute little song, "How About a Hand for the Hog," which he just did so cute. He had the overalls. He was adorable, and he has like this beautiful skin and dark hair and this really perky butt. He was just beyond cute. I used to write poems about this guy, like to this guy. Terrible, dreadful poetry that I would not share with this guy because I am not a poet. I would write poems about these drives that I would take. I would go and drive around the part of town where I knew he lived. I had no idea what his address or street was or which house was his, but I knew the part of town that he lived in. And so I would just drive around at midnight with the windows down, like this like hot summer air blowing across, just like, oh, he's near here somewhere. I know he's near here. I mean, it was really kind of creepy, but I was infatuated with this guy, you know? I remember at the time I was also infatuated with this Poi Dog Pondering album, and there was all these songs, and they all seemed to be love songs. They all seemed to be about him. "Say That You'll Be the One" was one of the songs, but then the one that really got me was called "Tabou Chez Tabou." It's French, and it means your mouth is forbidden. And I just would sing that over and over again. I'd play that while I was driving around at midnight around his neighborhood. One of the lyrics was, "My love for you, an unopened book, bittersweet, bittersweet." And I was like, oh, it's an unopened book, because guess what? He was dating a girl in the cast. So it was sort of a strange crush to have, but rather typical for me, certainly at that point in my life. So that was that. It was never expressed. I think I might have told one, the other older stagehand, this creepy guy named Horace. I think I had told him, and we would talk about Tommy and his amazing butt and self and presence. Now, flash forward years later, it turns out he is gay, and he's living in New York. So I found him and I tried to be his friend, but I never expressed anything else because so many years had passed. I had this perfect vision of this old crush, which I still had these feelings, but I was really afraid to risk it, ruin it, spoil it. We hung out some, we went to theater together, but that was it. And I never said anything, I never asked him out. And he lived here for, I don't know, a year or so. And then he was gonna move back south. And he had a going away party. So I went to the going away party, and it was one of those, we're in our mid-20s going away parties. So a bunch of people ended up just crashing there that night, and I was one of them. So then I sort of wake up in the morning, and he and I, we had some coffee, and he's like leaving the next day or something like that. And I was hungover and I was kind of emboldened. And I just said, you know, I wonder why we never went out. And he looked at me and he said, well, I guess because you never asked. And I was like, you mean you would have gone out with me? And he was like, well, why wouldn't I have? And I was so devastated. You know those people in the Middle Ages used to go around like beating themselves on the back? I walked out of that apartment like one of those people. I have known some pain in my life, but that was one of the sharpest. I took my own breath away with how foolish and cowardly I had been to never, ever risk expressing that. And there he was. He was like, yeah, you're a handsome guy. I would have gone out with you. Why not? I remember staggering out of his apartment, and this was before I had a cell phone, and I stumbled into a phone booth. It was pouring rain also, and I called a friend of mine to tell her. She knew I had this crush on this guy. I told her what he had said, and I just remember I burst into tears, just like the rain falling. Like, I was sobbing and just all by myself in the world, and it was because of my own fear. Later that year, I was in Baton Rouge for a holiday, and I called him up, and we got together. I wouldn't really call it a date, but I guess it was a date, because afterwards, we drove down to the levee on the river, and we got out, you know, looked at the stars, and I did kiss him. It was a great kiss. I was like up against the hood of the car, in the outdoors, the Mississippi River, the moon shining on it, you know, crickets. It was an amazing kiss, and I was like, that song that I used to like sing over and over again, taboo, shay taboo, your mouth is forbidden. Not anymore, but really, at that point, we didn't even live in the same city anymore, so it was still bittersweet. It was still an unopened book of whatever might have been. I learned from that one. I really try and express it now, because you can't walk around with that for a decade. What's the point of that? I don't know if I've got another decade.
That was Mark Sam Rosenthal with Tabouche a Taboo. Before that, a little gothiness from Jordan Cooper. One more for you folks. This is our man, Adam Wade. A good guy having a good time, because it's a good time for the good guys. We call this the Poetry Man.
My name is Adam Wade. I'm originally from New Hampshire. When I was a freshman in high school in New Hampshire, I played the saxophone in the marching band, and compared to junior high, we didn't have to really practice much. In high school, we played a lot, and for some reason, I'm a delicate flower. I blew my eardrums consistently from all the excess blowing of my alto saxophone, and I had to go to the doctor, and basically, I was getting these ear infections, and he said, you can no longer play. This was a huge problem, because I was still in the band, so I would just kind of go like this, and you know, and like smile, like if I saw people I knew. But the band is, I missed a 4.0 my third quarter of freshman year because I got a B in band, and it's sad. It's not good. And the hierarchy of high school was there is the high school, and then ostracized from our whole high school was the band. And by not playing, a lot of the other kids in the band, some of them were nice. But a lot of them weren't nice, and I was pretty much ostracized from the band. So it was high school band and me, and things were, I had a some problems. And my parents did not take me to therapy, which I probably needed. But my father got me a job in that May at a restaurant called the Puritan Back Room, where I was a busboy. And for me, it was great because I almost started from scratch. And like a busing tables, you're... Not the best job. It wasn't very fun. I mean, clearing tables but I tried to make the lemonade out of lemons. So I was like, what I did was I would get the ice for the bartenders, stuff I didn't have to do. They didn't have an employee of the month, but if they did, I would have got it. All right. But the reason I hated the job. But the thing that kept me going was Susie. Now Susie was a senior in my high school. And, like, she was the only hostess that gave me the time of day. And when I say the time of day, she would say, like, Adam, you're doing a good job. And she would touch me. And, like, I was puberty. I was 15 years old. And a girl just, like, taps shoe, the things happen. And it was just unbelievable. And like, the best describer, she looked like Whitney Houston circa, like, white, but with the puffy blonde hair. Like, I want to dance with somebody. That she looked just, and she smelled like oranges. And she wore flower dresses. And she was always smiling. And, like smiling at me, and it just made like I switched my schedule. Like during that summer, every time like when the schedule came out on Thursday, I would switch my schedule to have her schedule, so I'd always be with her, and it was great. But unfortunately, like Susie had a boyfriend, and his name was Terry, and he was a prick. He worked at a convenience store. He was like 25. His parents' convenience store. He was a part-time bookie, and he sung in a cover band, a George Thurgood cover band called Bad to the Bones, and it's true. And at the end of the night, we should always be smoking by the trash compactor, and I'd do the garbage. I'd work it. You know, I wasn't a stalker, but I was. So, and one night she told me, she's like, you know, Terry, he looks just like George Thurgood a little bit. I go, oh, yeah, he does, yeah. But you know, she's like, I got to tell you something. And I'm like, why? And she's like, he can't play the guitar, and he's so insecure about that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And she's like, and that turns me on. And I was like, wow, like that's a vulnerability, and she's turned on. Like, and like to me, like I thought at 15 years old, like I have a lot of vulnerabilities. I might have a shot. I mean, if she's attracted to vulnerability, Adam Wade, a lot of vulnerability. So I was dreaming. It was a dreamy thing. And like I made like you $5 an hour. The waitresses didn't tip you out, which wasn't very nice. But the waitresses were nice. It was, come on, $5 an hour. I got to eat for free. And I would make I would hide stuff. I mean, I wasn't supposed to, but I would. And I made these milkshakes. And I was creative. I mean, I'm not Ben and Jerry's, but I made this milkshake. If you've ever had an Andy's Mint, okay, I'd make these Adam's Andy's Mint milkshakes. And it's like you take two scoops of mint chocolate chip, put a little hot fudge with the milk, and then you blend it. And when you drink it, okay, like the chips, like with the hot fudge, it melt. It's like unbelievable. Like after I sneak two hot dogs in the bathroom, I come out and make that. It was excellent. So I'm sucking one of those down, and it's good. I'm in heaven for a moment. I mean, it was simple pleasures, folks. And like Susie walks by, and she's like, "Oh, what are you doing?" And I explain, and she's like, "Oh, can I have a sip?" Now I gotta tell you, I don't like sharing drinks with anybody. Like, growing up, my mother would be like, let me have a sip of your Coke. I'd be like, have it. I don't want it. Have it, please. It's good. I don't want your, you know. But with Susie, it was different. It was different. I go, please have a sip. And I watched her. She had like her purple lipstick. She sucked it down, and like the purple lipstick was on the white straw. And she goes, oh, I go, you like it? She's like, yeah. I go, yeah. She's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, God. And I was getting all excited with the apron. I'm not big, so they couldn't see it, but I was very excited. And so she walks away, and like I got this thing, and I'm looking, and I'm like, and I put it right to my lips, and I start drinking, and it was like the closest I came to kissing her, you know. And I've kissed like 12 or 13 girls in my life. I'm 34, but like that was the best kiss. I mean, it's not even, that's in top three. It's number one, just because like at that moment I had my lips where her lip, and I could smell, so it was good. So, like, at the end of the night, like I said, she would always be in the back, and she would be smoking, and I would do work by the trash compactor, and they had, like, so, and we would talk, and I wouldn't say much, because I always say stupid stuff, but like, you know, she always say, like, she has Cabbage Patch dolls, she, you know, she's wanted to be in the CIA, and she wanted to study penguins in the North Pole, and I know that penguins are in Antarctica, not in the North, but I didn't say anything, because I'm not a buzzkill, I don't think. So like she's going on and on, and like these nights, it's like 2 minutes, and then Terry comes on his Kawasaki Ninja motorcycle, and he picks her up, and they drive off. But like those 2 minutes, like I can't tell you like how great they were. Like it was so, and like it moved me. Like I'm not a poet or anything like that, but like at 15 years old, like I had a lot of time to think about things, and I wrote a poem about her, and my whole thing was like, you gotta read this to Susie, and like I thought it was the greatest thing, and I'm like, no, you can't read it to her, because like you're paranoid, like you finally, you got a niche, like the bartender talks to you, you know, the waitresses, if all of a sudden they start saying Adam's the poet, the bad poet, or if she shows people, like I don't need that, like my karma. But I'm like, you got to do it. So like the countdown was going, and I know she was going to go to the University of New Hampshire, and I kept it in my back pocket. I'm like, I'm going to do it. And then we get out, and I'm like, hey, Susie, and we throw in the garbage, and I couldn't do it. And I'm like panicking, and like, you come to a point in your life where, well, I mean, at least for me, it's like, you know what? What the fuck? Do it. So it was like the last night she was there, it was the last night, and I was panting, like I can't tell you, I was sweating, I threw up in the bathroom, I was, I mean, it was, and my voice got gravelly, but I was like, you gotta do it, so I timed it, and it was like her last shift, she's hugging everybody, I got the poem, and I got it in my hand, and I'm holding it like this, and she walks out, and I see her light the cool cigarette, and I run out, I go, Susie, it's your last night, and she's like, yeah, I know, and I go, I wrote a poem for you, I'd like to read it. And she's like, oh, really? Yes, please. And I go, okay. And I didn't look at her when I read it, so just so you know. Susie, Susie at work, do the locomotion. Here's your milkshake, the Wade love potion. And I didn't mean it dirty. My last name's Wade. It was the milkshake. It's mint chocolate chip ice cream with hot fudge and milk. I love your flower dresses. Are they cotton or silk? I got a 10-speed bike. Yeah, I'm the motor. Born to be wild. I'm a 15-year-old Hell's Angel. Now, like Terry had the Kawasaki Ninja, I had the Raleigh Capri bike with my Red Sox batting gloves. I would drive. Nobody knew, could understand what I was trying to do. You see people at the restaurant. You're the hostess with the mostest. I may clean off the tables, but I'm a rebel like James Dean. And like I was like this, I was like a little chubby, and I had like my, because I was in my James Dean phase, like Rebel Without a Cause, I was watching it all the time, and I was like sucking in my cheeks all the time, I was trying, and I grew the sideburns, I couldn't grow hair, so it was just long, and it was like, it was bad, but my Aunt Susie was the general manager at Filene's, and she got me this double extra large, because it was free, like red, like Barracuda jacket, like Jan, and I wore that like on the hottest days, like to work, because I thought that was cool. No, it wasn't. Cliff the dishwasher can crap his pants again, but you smell just the opposite of him. I hope your boyfriend moves to California. He's getting too big for his britches. I'll pop him with a shovel and give him 6 stitches. Now my dad, like, he's not a big guy, but he always told me, like, if you ever get in a fight, like, hit someone with a shovel. And I've been in 2 fights, I've gotten my ass kicked, I'm bad. But, like, part of the joke is, like, I'm always looking for the shovel. But it's, yeah, okay. Seriously, like, if you push me in the bar, if there's a shovel, look out, I'm badass. I can't smoke because I have baby lungs, and I'm asthmatic. I can't smoke because I have baby lungs, but you look sexy when you do it outside while I empty the garbage into the trash compactor. Remember you told me you have 14 Cabbage Patch dolls? I got a big heart for you, even though my lungs are small. I love you, Susie. You are my carpe diem. And that's, I took Latin, but no, that wasn't the... The teacher was easy, so I got A's, but I did not learn proper usage. So I finished it, and then I looked up at her, and I gave her like one of these, and she was like teary-eyed. She was teary-eyed. She was moved, and she came over to me. She goes, Adam, you are so special. And I don't know if she meant like special needs or special, but in my head, I was like, I was so emotional. I go, she meant it the good way. She meant it the good way. And she gave me a big hug, and like she squeezed me. And this was like my moment to be reciprocated to her. But I gave her, like, I've never hugged a woman before except my grandmother and my aunt and my mother. So I kind of gave her like a dead fish hug, which was it's a big regret of mine. But I just went like that, and we were there for a minute. And then Terry came into the parking lot, and she got off. And this was the last time I was going to see her. So I was emotional, and I was bawling. And, like, I cry. Make feel bad for yourself, Adam Wade. I was teary-eyed. And then my last part of the job of the night is you walk around the parking lot three times picking up cigarette butts, and you have to have at least 150 before you can go back into the work. So, which is fun. I mean, you could be out there all night. And I'm bawling my eyes out, and I'm like, the third loop, and I've gotten a lot of cigarettes. I'm good at this. I can. It's dark, but I pick them out because I've been doing it. And I'm crying. I'm feeling bad for myself, like nobody's business. But then, it was like this moment where I'm like, you know, think about it. Like, no one, like, even talks too much in high school, but, like, you just emotionally did something that actually moved, like, the prettiest girl you've ever seen, like, for you. And like, all of a sudden, like, my tears were like tears of joy, because for the first time in my life, and perhaps the last time, like, it gave me, like, a huge amount of hope and like, a sense that, like, it might take a long time, but you got potential. You got potential. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And there you have it, folks. We like a lot of things, but there's three things we like most. Love, love, and love. We're going to go out with a tune by the man of surprises, Ben Lerman. And remember what the Brazilians say about risk. Anyone who has an anus also has concerns. And trust me, folks, those Brazilians do have anuses. Do they ever?
Well, there ain't enough weed, ain't enough booze, ain't enough mileage on my dancing shoes. Ain't there more to life than this? Oh, there ain't enough boys with enough boys. Ain't a lot of music, but there's plenty of noise. That's why I'm taking a risk. I was born on a dance floor, like most modern men. For I could talk, try to moonwalk, face planet. Now there ain't enough Lee, ain't enough Chee, ain't enough bubbles in my bubble tea. I take some comfort in your kiss, but there ain't enough smokes, ain't enough jokes. Loving ain't forever, just so somebody croaks. That's why I'm taking a risk. Oh, I ought to be an astronaut so I can dance on the moon. Reborn, as magical as a unicorn, I swing, don't care if I miss. You can have the whole world right in your palm, but your hand will explode if they drop the bomb. That's why I'm taking a risk. Look out, I'm taking a risk.
Hear that, brother? I said back up, cause I'm taking an operational, quite sensational, inspirational, confrontational. Lord knows I'm taking a risk.